Welcome to the Speak and Get What You Want podcast, where you learn to communicate like the world's most successful leaders. Now, here are your hosts, TK Stratton and Chad Kirby.
What we have today, we're going to be taking on a subject that often gets overlooked when we're speaking about communicating and really speaking and getting what you want. And that subject is your emotions and the impact that your emotions have in your communication. And so for today's episode, we're going to be talking with an expert when it comes to emotional ownership. And that's the great Larry Kirby. How you doing, Larry?
Chad, always good to be with you, man. Always good to follow your career and see where you're at.
Well, I appreciate you taking some time to talk through emotional ownership, because, you know, it's interesting that people spend so much time thinking about communicating and making sure they have the right words and saying the right things, but then often neglect the emotions that surround those words and that communication that really can be a driving force for either success or failure.
Well, and part of that is our mirror neurons. We are so quick when, you know, working with parents for the past 18, 20 years, it's when a child gets upset, when they get angry, quite often, you know, that sets us off and we get uncomfortable. And instead of inviting that child to our calmness, because of our mirror neurons, we actually enter into their chaos. And it's the same relationship with your customers, the same relationship with your client. How are you able to invite people to your calmness versus entering into their frustration?
Right, right. And I often, you know, we often teach people match your energy, you know, and when you're bringing frustration or when you're bringing anger, it's incredible how quickly people match that energy. So what was it that got you to begin thinking beyond just the words of communication and diving into the emotion that is attached to it?
You know, it's again starting to work with parents. We were teaching, and the reason I started working with parents is because I had a child that my sweet wife gave birth to that I love and adore and owe so much to, but did not have the skills to thrive in that relationship. And so my wife and I, we needed help. I found a mentor and we found some philosophies and some programs that made such a huge difference with having a strong-willed kid, where we became committed to teaching the very things that changed our lives. And as I was, you know, over years teaching parents, a lot of times they'd come back and say, hey, this isn't working. And I said, okay, well, tell me what exactly you're doing and how you're doing it. Well, everything we teach doesn't work when you're yelling and you're frustrated and you're angry. And right. So the missing link, and that's what makes such a difference in my parent coaching. Although I work with businesses, I also still coach parents and educators, to where, you know, our coaching is twofold. It's the tools to thrive with that child and the tools to thrive with your emotions while thriving with that child. And it's a two-part. And the reason being is, if I just focused on helping parents with the tools to thrive in these situations, the situations have to get better for the parents to feel good. And the parents have to feel better and be at peace before things get good. And that was a critical part, but it's been such a blessing, again, not to only experience it and to work with parents, but to be able to take these same exact principles into empathy training with small businesses and organizations, helping them to understand that it's not about saying no to your customer. It's about how you say no to your customer. Mm.
Right.
And that's critical to thrive in the relationship. And I had a recent experience with that really made me realize, you know, your relationship with your customer is not any better than your most recent interaction.
Wow. And you know what? I know you've spent a ton of time working with parents and coaching parents, but the reality is, and I appreciate you bringing up that insight, that you also work with small businesses, because the reality is, it's no different. And I know that you say, well, parenting's a lot different than leading a company. It is, but at the same time, it's not. Like, a lot of effective leaders, if they apply those same principles to parenting, will be effective parenting, right? Because leadership is leadership, whether it's with parents and a child or with an organization.
Management is parenting. Leadership is parenting. It is, right. It is the same principles. And, you know, I had a recent experience yesterday with an organization with a cell phone carrier, which I don't know if I'm supposed to name their name or not, but they definitely stand out with one letter before the rest of the name. And I've been with them for 20 years and I've had so many positive experiences, and they remind me every time I call, thank you for being with us for 21 years. Thank you. And every time I call, I've had such a positive experience. Well, I got my wife the new iPhone, and we've been busy, and I hadn't put new glass on it, the protective glass. And so it's sat on the shelf for the past several months. Well, yesterday we're like, we should probably activate it. We should probably go. So I went and got the glass, got the case at that unnamed carrier, and had a good experience. Well, we get home and she's transferring her information and had to update it, and it just started glitching. And it wouldn't let us get into the screen. And I was getting a little frustrated. So I called T-Mobile and they tried to talk me through it. And I said, you can't even talk me through this because there's nothing that can be done. I tried hard resetting it several times. They said, take it to the store. They have more tools to be able to work with it. So I get back in the car, not excited about this. And I go to the store. And as soon as I get there, they look at it and try one thing. They said, there's nothing we can do. You need to take it to the Apple store. And I said, no, you don't understand. I bought it here. It's brand new. We just are barely setting up for the first time. He's like, ooh, you've got to take it to the Apple store. It just kind of cut me off. And I turned to, I said, who's the manager by chance? And the manager came over and I explained to him the situation. He said, yeah, no, you need to take it to the Apple store. And I said, the online or on the phone, they told me to come here. I don't know why they did that, but this needs to go to the Apple store. And he kept repeating that. And I kept getting more and more frustrated because I thought, no, you don't understand what I'm trying to say. And I said, okay, let me just record you telling me to go to the Apple store. Cause I wanted a record of whoever's telling me to do what.
Right.
And he said, no, it doesn't work that way. You can't record here. Just really short. And so I got his business card and I started auto recording anyways. I go to the Apple store. And I said, hey, they sent me over here, kind as can be, completely de-escalated situation, very kind. Hey, we'll get this taken care of for you. It lasted, you know, maybe 20 minutes. It was done. The phone was working just fine. And I was so irritated and frustrated leaving that company. And I thought, man, I'm ready to switch. I'm ready to switch carriers with that interaction of one person on the front lines,
right.
Lack of ability to show empathy. If I'd have gone in there and that manager would have said, hey, I know this sounds confusing. Hey, I apologize that over the phone, they told you to come here, man. I wish there was more we could do. I wish we had the tools to be able to take care of this. We do redirect people to the Apple store because they're the manufacturer. I know that sounds kind of crazy. I totally get it. I get your frustration. Again, I wish there was more I could do. That's the best way to be able to fix a situation. I want your phone fixed. I want you to be able to use it. But again, it's I just don't have the tools to be able to do that.
Right.
If that manager would have said that, taking 20 seconds, my whole experience would have been different.
Right.
I would have looked back at that manager and I thought, man, they're advocating for me, because again, how you communicate determines if you're sending the message, I'm on your team or I'm against your team.
Well,
and it doesn't take much to send the message, I'm on your team. There's not much I can do, but I'm still on your team. And I want you to be able to use that iPhone. You got a brand new iPhone. It's beautiful. It's top of the line. Man, I want you to be able to enjoy this. And as soon as we can get to the Apple store, the sooner you can be able to utilize this phone.
And it's amazing. I love David Horsager says in every interaction, we either increase or decrease trust, right?
Yes.
In every interaction, I mean, you've had so many positive interactions, but at the same time, in every interaction, you're either increasing or decreasing trust. And that's the reality of it. And so here now you are after 21 years saying, oh my goodness, because of the energy and the emotion that you felt at that experience, it's amazing the impact it can have.
Well, and that's why it's so critical to train our frontline staff with empathy training and understanding and emotional ownership, because it's the frontline staff that are usually the lowest paid individuals in the organization, but also have the most interaction and contact with the customers.
Right.
And so it's equipping them to be able to be successful. I mean, I think that manager wanted to be successful. I just don't think they had the tools. Now, again, my experience over at the Apple Store was very positive. However, if he would have looked at my phone, and now here's the thing, I already have an attitude towards Apple phones. Okay. I'm coming into this equation like, see, Apple's horrible and all this, because I'm also bitter because I told my wife I would switch to an Apple phone. And so I'm starting to re-question what I've committed to. But even if the gentleman at the Apple Store, although was very kind, if he would have just said, oh man, this stinks. I'm so sorry you're experiencing this. You know, we do our best to provide the best products possible. Thank you so much for bringing this phone in. It is so critical for us to be able to meet our customers' needs and exceed them. And when we don't, thank you for bringing it to our attention. We want you to be able to use this phone. We're going to get you in here as quick as possible to make that happen. Even that would have just upped the value a little bit more. And all it is language. And I call this value-added language. And our frontline staff need to understand what value-added language means and how to use it to truly add value to the organization.
Well, and really acknowledging, and it really goes back to listening, because people really truly need to listen and hear what's being said. You know, I've shared in the past, and I was speaking at an event years ago with Simon Sinek, and Simon Sinek personally to me is someone that's, you know, someone I hold in very high regard, and I enjoy
very much so,
listening to him. And so we had a moment to chat after his presentation, and I was like, Simon, your presentation was phenomenal. You know, it was so good. And he stopped and he was listening to every word I said. And he was like, oh, wow, I'm flattered that you would say that, you know, like, and I was like, whoa, this is incredible, because like, he could have so easily just blown me off and been you know, you're welcome. I hear that all the time, because I'm sure Simon Sinek does hear that all the time. I'm sure he hears all the time how great he is, how smart he is, all of the above, but he stopped and he listened to every word that I was saying, that all of a sudden I was like, oh my goodness, he's really listening. I got to say something, you know, profound about what he said, you know, because he wasn't interested in me just saying, oh, good job. And him saying, oh yeah, thanks, you know, on his way. But he was very intentional in listening to me and then acknowledged like what I had said, and he heard me and was genuinely flattered by my comments. Right. And so it was like, wow. And so I left that exchange, and I don't even remember what we said to one another, but I left that exchange an even bigger fan of Simon Sinek, because I was like,
wow,
oh my goodness. This guy's legit. This guy listens. This guy really cares. And as opposed to, you and I have been, you know, speaking long enough to where we've had experiences with other people that we hold in high regard. And then we meet them in person and we're like, oh my goodness, I can never pick up their book again. You know,
I was just going to say that, how grateful I am that he has such a positive experience with him, because he truly is living his brand. He's the epitome of empathy and communicating empathy. And for him to take that moment to send that message, wow, you're important. I care about what you have to say. And I'm sure there's a million things going on in his mind, but he's able to put it aside to listen to you. We both have, you know, there's always that joke of don't meet some of these heroes you look up to, because they may not interact. And I had my own experience with that. Someone that I held in such high regard, very successful, an incredible show. And I had multiple interactions with them. And I just, it was sad, because I really looked up to this individual, and I just thought, man, it's different.
Well, and to go further with this Simon Sinek example, he and I were chatting actually after we had all spoken. They had a little meet and greet with like 100 people that could come and meet the people that had spoken at the event. And they asked, and they said over and over again, no pictures, right? Because we don't want the speakers to get held up, you know, taking pictures over and over again. And an individual walked up to Simon Sinek and said, hey, I know we're not supposed to take pictures. And he's like, oh, come on, let's take a picture. You know, like, I don't care. Like, come on, let's take a picture, get over here, you know? And I was just like, wow, that just changes everything. And so as you're talking about, you know,
Can I just say one thing about that?
Yeah.
That gentleman coming up led with empathy. And I love that phrase, led with empathy, because he said, hey, I know we're not supposed to take pictures.
Right.
And when I talk about leading with empathy, it's that message of, I see you, I hear you, I get it. That opened the door so much more than just saying, hey, can I get a picture with you? Just that empathy of, hey, I know we're not supposed to get pictures. I see you, I hear you, I get it. Which open the door to get that picture.
Absolutely. And then they took the picture, and Simon was just, it goes back to simply, and I know this is, you know, this is very difficult for us to do at sometimes, but just being human, just be a human being. And Simon Sinek was like, to your point, look, I see you, you're a good individual. You just come up, you want a picture, and that's it. And that's the extent of it. So let me ask you this, Larry, if somebody's saying, okay, I need to be better at emotional ownership, I need to be better because I'm working to be effectively speaking and getting what I want, but how do I become more effective? What three things would you tell somebody saying, okay, listen, you want to be more effective at owning your emotions, here are three things you need to do. What would those be?
You know, in getting curious about, you know, the emotional ownership model is, there's events that happen in our life. Okay. And these are just the facts, events that happen. And then we have our thoughts about what happened and then creates our emotion. A lot of times we think we're frustrated because our kid did this. We're frustrated because our customer did this. We're frustrated because our employee did this. We're not frustrated at what they do. We're frustrated at the meaning we give it, what we tell us ourselves about what it does, about what they do. And it's the same in all relationships. You don't get frustrated at your spouse because of what they do. You're frustrated based on the thoughts you have about what they do. And a lot of times those thoughts come in the form of what I like to call the fight against reality, in this world of, it shouldn't be this way. My wife shouldn't treat me this way. She shouldn't be doing this. My brother shouldn't be doing this. My sister shouldn't be doing this. My manager shouldn't be doing this. Well, what's the reality? The reality, they are doing that. And I have zero power in my life when I'm living in this world of, it shouldn't be this way. And you can fight against reality, but I can't remember who said it. You lose only every time.
Right.
And Katie Byron, I think, referenced that. And so it's accepting the reality of the situation, not condoning it, but accepting the reality of the situation. And what's the reality? Sometimes your spouse is going to annoy you. And that's part of being human. Like, nothing's wrong here, because associated with that fight against reality is, something's wrong here. Like, nothing's wrong here. You just got annoyed. Welcome to human interaction.
Right.
And that's okay. And so I can be annoyed and not be frustrated. I can have that thought of, this is one of those times where my wife annoys me. But my decision to love her, and it's not even looking past that, it's focusing on what I want to focus about my spouse. Yeah, of course she annoys me sometimes. I annoy her, but I love her because I'm focusing, what you focus on, you feel. And when I'm focusing on the characteristics I love about her, and in my mind, I'm holding that nurturing, thinking about her and bonded with her, the time she annoys me just doesn't have much power. because my thoughts are turns more towards nurturing and admiration than frustration and irritation.
Right.
And so when our thoughts start to go towards frustration and irritation, or when we feel the emotion of frustration and irritation, it's a direct relation to our thoughts. And so emotional ownership is managing, and I struggle with the word managing, but it's creating an awareness and managing our thoughts and the meaning we give the world around us.
Ooh.
Managing
your thoughts.
To our kids, to our spouse, to our customers, to everything. Because when you're thriving with a customer, you're not just trying to thrive in your situation. You're trying to thrive with everything they're bringing to the table. You know, you're trying to thrive in your interaction, of which they slept in, or their kid just told them off, or everything they're bringing to that table. And so I've got to hold on to the thoughts that put me into a good vibration, into a good emotion. I never tell my clients, you know, a certain thought is wrong or right.
Right.
The question is always, is it serving you? And so are the thoughts I'm holding on towards my wife serving me or not serving me? Are they drawing me closer or drawing me farther apart? And when they draw you farther apart, that's when you start getting into the four horsemen that Dr. John Gottman talks about. That's when we start being critical of each other. That's when we start in this attitude of I'm better than them. And so it's towards your customers. When I work with call centers, sometimes it gets cynical to where a customer's calling and after they hang out, they turn to each other, hey, this moron did this or whatever. And that just doesn't help the situation. And so are the thoughts I'm having towards the phone call I'm engaging in right now supporting me or not supporting me? Are they helping me to reach my goals in loving and having empathy on this individual, or are they making me irritated at this individual? Not to be confused with not having boundaries with someone belligerent. You know, if someone belligerent comes to someone on your front line and starts dropping the F-bomb and swearing, it's, hey, sir, you sound really frustrated. I really want to help you. Unfortunately, when you're cussing at me, I do have to turn you over to the manager and let them. I really wish I could help you. I really want to help you to resolve this situation, but unfortunately, I can't unless we can communicate a little bit more respectful of each other. If not, I'm just going to have to pass you over to my manager.
You think about that. If you are so managing, and if I could go back real quickly, managing number one thing, managing those thoughts. I think that is awesome because it's amazing to think about how fast we go to a dark place, right? So you think to yourself, okay,
20 years with a company and it's been amazing. And then
it can change like that. So manage those thoughts. Number two that I love that you bring up is then manage the meaning, right? Like, it's amazing to me that sometimes people will say, you know, somebody who wants to quit your services or someone who chooses to go with somebody else or whatever, we attach meaning to that. Like we're less than, we're not as successful. And we list all those things. So managing your thoughts, I think that's a huge takeaway that everyone should be aware of and just work on being intentional about managing those thoughts. The second thing you said there, and then manage the meaning behind it. Maybe it was just not the right time for someone to work with you or whatever it might be. Don't manage the meaning of, oh, I'm a failure, I'm a terrible person, and we beat ourselves up so much by establishing that meaning. But Larry, in just the last couple of minutes that we have left, manage your thoughts, manage the meaning, but what's a third thing that you would suggest?
Well, again, one indication of that is creating an awareness of what emotion am I feeling right now? What vibration? And if I'm just even paying attention to my vibration, that's an indication to me of what thoughts I'm having about the world around me in this moment. If I'm in traffic and I'm feeling anxious and irritated, that's an indication of where my thoughts are. And so when it's same with our customers. If our customers come in feeling frustrated, I have to identify, man, what thoughts are they having in that moment, and what meaning are they giving it for them to be frustrated, and not to make them wrong for feeling that way, and not to make ourselves wrong for feeling that way. And in realizing, man, I'm feeling frustration. Okay, I'm human. This happens from time to time. What thoughts am I holding on to in this moment that's causing this? What fight against reality am I holding on to? You know, and we talk about when customers leave us. I was working with an individual who was dating this girl. She no longer likes him. And he said, man, this is the girl of my dreams. I said, no, it's not. Well, yeah, she is. I'm like, no, it's not. But you don't understand how amazing she is. I said, no, it's not. He's like, what do you mean? The girl of your dreams wants you back.
Right.
If the person, I don't care how incredible they are. If the person doesn't want you back, they're not the girl of your dreams.
Right.
If the customer doesn't want you, you're like, you don't really want them.
Right. Exactly.
You want a customer, and nothing against that customer. I want a customer that's excited to work with me. If I have a customer
that's
questioning everything I do, you know, I consult with some animal hospitals, and some customers come in with this idea of, well, you're going to try and take me for every nickel and dime. And you see it. And that's fine, but here's the thing: they're bringing all of that into the appointment. Those aren't the customers I want that are coming in with all those preconceived notions. And so, if I have a customer that's coming in with preconceived notions, and it's not even necessarily against me, it may be I'm just not the right fit for them.
Right.
And so, I don't want to adjust who I am and what I do to try and win them over. They're not my people. They're not my customer.
That is so important to recognize, right? To really understand that so much time is wasted on trying to get somebody, a client or someone, to engage or like you or work with you when it's wasted. I love that you brought that up. But I'm just going to say, just to summarize, as we're out of time, but number one being manage those thoughts. Number two, manage the meaning. But number three, monitor the emotion. I love that. And that overarching principle that you just taught there, that if somebody is not wanting to engage with you, if somebody's not wanting to reciprocate, whether it be a customer, a client, or an individual, then don't get hung up on that. Don't assign meaning to that, and allow yourself to acknowledge the emotion, but then move forward. Because I believe as we do that and own those emotions, we'll be able to communicate more powerfully and experience just a whole nother level of success. So
beautiful,
Larry, thank you for spending this time with us, for sharing your thoughts. It was amazing, the insights that you share. It's always, always, always great to be with you, and appreciate it. So
thanks a lot, Chad. Always good to talk with you, and man, wish you the best.
Have a tremendous day, everyone. Bye now.